We don't need a dog on your company today.
I thought that was pretty good content, but if you don't think so, that's fine.
You know what? We people will be left wondering, yeah. What was such the good content, such that good? Yeah. Hey, John, welcome to Pudding Time.
Can you believe we pretty much have never had technical problems like we just had in the...
I know, super
nearly
weird.
Nearly 80 episodes we've done.
I know, nearly 80, by the way, which is an accomplishment. There are many people that wish they would have lived 80 years. So I think that means that we're doing okay.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, what you said just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those things are the same, podcast episodes and years of life. people have been knocking on my door almost nonstop since last week wondering, where were you all last week?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like they did last month when we were gone for several. So I want to dispel any rumors of my death, which have been...
This is not a Kate Middleton situation.
Right. They've been greatly exaggerated. I am not... I'm okay.
You're fine. You seem great.
I avoided COVID.
Ooh.
It turns out.
Nice.
I was testing like... enough that I was just getting used to having the sticks in my nose, you know? It was just
put one in, take one out.
Like a very small Barbie plunger-sized thing. So Bethany had COVID last week. That's the rub. And somehow everyone else avoided it. She was pretty sick, though. Like, she was... There were a couple days where she was really kind of out of it.
It's still a bad virus.
Turns out, no amount of, like... weird, you know, flat earthing can make it not a bad virus.
It's true.
Anyway, I had that in my could be improved. Oh, by the way, we're starting. And I'm facilitating.
That's right.
Y'all can deal with that. I had in my could be improved COVID-2 electric boogaloo.
And obviously this could be improved. Don't want Bethany to have gotten COVID,
right?
But pretty sweet that, like, what was the procedure that kept her isolated enough that none of y'all got it from her?
Well, I don't really know because she still ate with us and stuff, but she did sleep in the basement.
Hmm.
That was,
and I guess, just like having the vaccines is
it's safeguard. I don't know if you remember that, like, back in the throes of the of like 2020, 2021, people were talking about basically multiple layers of Swiss cheese, even though each one of them in itself is has some gaps.
Imperfect.
They probably, when you stack them together, they're less, you know, they do provide enough protection. So it could be that, you know, we did do some isolation within our house. But also, you know, I've had both COVID and how many now rounds of vaccine and so I did get some kind of weird cold, but it never came up as COVID, so that was weird. But yeah, it's still a thing 4 years on, almost to the day she got it. Like,
that's funny,
you know. It was like, it's weird to think that there are people that started college the year of COVID and are about to graduate college. You know what I mean?
That,
like, their
weird
entire college career has been within the COVID world.
Or high school.
Or high school. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Any four year span that you want to choose, you know? The warranty for your refrigerator, whatever it is.
Right. The people that bought refrigerators this time
with four year warranties.
With 4 year warranties. What a time to be alive for them.
I know. They don't even make four-year warranty fridges anymore because of supply chain issues. I'm going to mark that addressed. I made that up.
Yeah.
Although it feels true. There's a lot of things in here, and they're not really organized, so I'm just going to start pulling them. And this first one I'm moving up to the top because I don't understand it, and that usually is my clue that I want to know more about it. It's from you. It says, Jack is super into this coding thing on his school iPad.
Yeah, so we maybe have even talked before. He's done like Scratch, I think, is the programming thing.
MIT's, environment.
I think your son's been into
Oliver's really into Scratch. Yeah.
So that I was aware of and knew. I guess there's like also another one called Code, like Code. Shoot, I should have looked this up. Another coding kind of tutorial, like it's like a tutorials mixed with like a web-based coding environment.
Okay.
But it's very focused on kids.
Yeah.
Jack has been super into this thing. It seems to be mostly focused on pick a song, pick some like characters, and then wire up these buttons to like make them dance while the song is playing. And then you're challenged to do things like make it so that the behavior starts after four measures in the song, or, you know, make it conditional this way or that way, or whatever. Just like trying to introduce different programming concepts.
Interesting. But
he's been super into it, and it's been kind of cute to see him, you know, make things and then want to show them to you. And
yeah. Yeah. Have you tried it yourself, or is it just him and he's showing it to you?
It's more like he's doing it and he's showing it to me.
Yeah. That's kind of how I am with Scratch. Like,
yeah.
It's for babies. I get it. You know,
it's for babies.
I'm kidding.
But this connects to a card of mine in the Could Be Improved column, this quote unquote math game that Jack was playing.
Oh boy.
So he also has access to like some educational games.
Sure.
That are, I mean, back in the day, they would have been like Java apps or something. They're not, but it definitely has that feel to it. So this game he was playing.
Uh huh.
The like what you see on screen is like Earth in space, you know, the pinpricks of the stars, you know, black background with the pinprick of the stars, and then you see Earth kind of hovering in space, and you see a counter for your energy. How much energy do you have?
Okay.
And it goes up every second, or, you know, every game tick you get more energy.
Okay.
And how much energy you get is determined by how many times you click on the Earth.
Oh boy.
So like every time you click, you get one more energy. But then with your energy, you can spend your energy to upgrade your clicks, to double how much you get from your clicks. And you can also buy things, structures that passively give you more and increase your passive energy income.
Okay.
So after 1,000 energy, then you can buy like this warehouse, and then your energy will go down to zero because you had to spend your 1,000 to get it.
Yeah.
But then now every second
you. But now you can leave the computer open and then like come back after dinner.
Yeah. Okay. Like, what's the point though? The point is, you know, so here's Earth, and then if you click a thing, you sort of slide over, and the next planet to unlock at 1,000,000 energy is Mars. And then if you slide the next one, I think it was Jupiter, at 1,000,000,000,000 energy, you can buy that planet. When you buy those planets, you just have like another thing to click on.
Right.
And like more structures to buy that increase how much passive energy income you get. Anyway, so I'm trying to describe this as like, it's a pretty stupid game.
Right.
Like it's mostly about like wasting this kid's time.
Wasting time. Yeah.
maybe there's an educational component around like orders of like understanding orders of magnitude a little bit. Like he had to understand that like one tick, like one energy per second when he was working on getting Earth was one thing. But like when you're trying to get 1,000,000,000,000 energy, you're never going to get there. You have to like invest in the passive. Anyway, there's like maybe some concepts there.
Maybe something like, it seems almost like a pro-capitalism. Like once you get once you get passive income, though, that's where you really
get
to go to Mars.
Yeah, once you own property, then you're really going to
get it. It's basically chicken. Elon Musk's like propaganda. Life. Yeah, his life.
Anyway, yeah, so this is like the two kind of like game-related things going on in Jack's life. This fun environment where you can like learn how to program, and this really stupid game that's kind of captured his imagination.
What I'm gathering from all of this is that you've put one of them in one column and one of them in another, and I think that was not a hard decision for you. Like they already exist in two different columns in your mind. Like
that's the
one that you're like, ooh, he should be playing that, and the other one's like, Jack, this is stupid.
Yeah, and he was like, what? It's fun. Like, okay.
Oh, boy. It's funny. As soon as you said that, I immediately had a I think you should leave a Tim Robinson sketch that came to mind. There's one where he like he's just clicking on an egg over and over. He just clicks on eggs. Okay. Or like he's like feeding the egg more eggs or something. It's like he's just dragging and then you eventually get more eggs or something. It's just like
He finally
beats the game and it goes where, you know, that show tends to go, which is it goes bizarre. But yeah, that is immediately what I thought of was the feed me eggs or whatever thing. Interesting. Yeah. Speaking of games, I don't know if you've heard of this game, but my family's been pretty into it. It's called Cascadia.
What's that?
So the theme is like Pacific Northwest, and you have like different terrain types. It's basically you're playing tiles, right? You're drafting tiles from a central area, and every
you're
turn
building
you
your
take
own
one.
Board, or you're building a community board.
You're building your own, and every time it comes around, you take a tile and a wildlife. You're trying to score points.
Oh, this looks kind of cute.
Yeah, you score points based on the wildlife shapes and based on your biggest like terrain type. So it's not a super complicated game, but what's interesting about it is for all of its simplicity, I never have any idea who has won until we actually add up everything at the end.
Interesting. So
it's kind of fun.
That reminds me when we were talking about your game trip, and we're talking, or maybe it wasn't, but we were talking about Wingspan, and I was saying,
oh yeah,
I just never know until the end who's winning, and I kind of like that makes it more fun. I think
I agree because it's like the opposite end of the extreme, like with an elimination game, where you know who's going to win because everyone else is
Monopoly is a good example.
Yeah, it's like
you can very visibly see who's winning.
And the point of Monopoly, in my mind, is the original intent was that it's not a fun game. It's to demonstrate how terrible capitalism is, right? The ruthlessness of the real estate market, et cetera. I think that games like this make it feel like even though it's competitive, you're actually you're really working on your own puzzle the whole time. It's almost like parallel puzzles, and then everyone gets to find out who puzzled the slightly strongest. But it's not even like that disparate of scores. Like there's a pretty big swing when I play Wingspan between the highest and the lowest score, but this game is actually usually pretty close.
That's cool.
So I thought that's another interesting.
And does the whole Davy clan play?
So the oldest, so Eva hasn't tried it yet. We haven't tried it with her, but I think everyone else has played it. And I've also taken it to my guy's game night, and it's been popular
kind of
there. Yeah.
Sweet. I think I'm going to look into this one.
Yeah, it's a good one. So that was that. Oh, you've got another one here. This is very apropos because both Bethany and I have gone to the optometrist recently, and I assume this is what this is about. It says no more, quote unquote, puff eye test.
Yeah, so I realized that I hadn't been to the eye doctor since I started at Artsy like almost 7.5 years ago or something. Like I should probably just like get some new
friends. Do you wear glasses?
Yes, I do wear glasses, but only for distance, and so you almost never see me wear them because it's really just for like driving or watching a movie or something like that.
Okay.
And so I never wear them like when I'm sitting at my desk. Anyway,
right.
There was a test that I dreaded where you would have to sort of like put your chin on this rest, like this rest, and they would kind of like position something kind of like between your eyelashes to do like a puff of air at your eyeball because they needed to do some test. I don't even really know.
Glaucoma or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I was dreading going to the eye doctor.
Okay.
Well, I guess somewhere along the way in 7 years, they've like eliminated that, or like some other test does that. I did have to do some other things, but they were more like scanning. And then,
You do the OptiMap thing where it like takes a picture of your eye, your retina.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no puffing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doc, when he came in, could kind of look at those pictures and kind of show me some of the parts of the anatomy of the eyeball that, you know, looked normal to him, basically, is what he was saying. Like, there was no, nothing really to say, just going over the stuff. Anyway, that made me feel a lot better that they didn't have that test, because I hated the thing. Like, I'm an adult man who, like, can't do it. Like,
yeah,
I'd be sitting there with the nurse who's, like, just trying to do her job, and here I am, like, blinking every time because I'm, like, I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's an issue for our youngest, too. And so I think we have just taken to – I actually haven't been the one to take her in a while, but I think we just say, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
That one's really not happening, so no.
I'm not going to put our kid through that.
No. Everyone else can do it. I just had it recently, like in January maybe, and it's like, here, look at a house, and I'm going to put my mouth on a tube somewhere is how it feels. That's what it feels like. It feels like someone's going with their mouth. Yeah. They're
so
not.
You have gotten it recently?
Yeah, but my eye doctor is probably not up on the latest and greatest, you know?
I mean, I literally just was like, you know, went to Google Maps and like searched eye doctor in my area, and that's the extent of the research I did.
Eye doctor minus puff. Okay, got it.
Zero puff eye doctor.
Yeah. That's right. Welcome to the no puff zone. Oh, I should have stuck with this when we were talking about games. This is actually a phone game, but you and I have both been playing this. It's called Strands. This is the new New York Times like daily game that they have.
Yes.
So I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it's really fun. It's called Strands. Very cool. You can only play via the website.
Yes, I was going to complain about this too.
It's in this like beta mode.
Uh-huh.
So the New York Times has their like main news iOS application. They also have like a crossword puzzle, but it has all the other games too, like game, like separate games app. And they also have like a cooking app. There's like a few different iOS applications in the New York Times world. Mm-hmm. But I didn't even know about this until I think my brother-in-law told me about it, because he gets like a daily email digest of like what's gone on that day. And I think maybe it was advertised in there.
Yeah.
Anyway. How strange for them to do the rollout this way. Like, they have this app. Why don't they just put it in the app as the beta test?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
Just very confusing.
I wonder if they wanted to see approval before going through the effort of putting it in, because I don't know if there's something about it being in the app that requires like longer, I don't know if there's app store approval stuff in there, or
can they iterate faster on the web than they can in an iOS application? They don't want like a beta version sticking around in someone's not updated version of the app.
Maybe if it's a failure but it still is on people's phones, they gotta support it. I don't know,
could be.
Although I assume most of the apps these days actually still talk to a website somewhere.
Totally.
You know, you have to get the puzzle for the day.
Right.
They're probably downloading the whole front page. It's all React anyway, all the way down.
Yeah, I mean, when I play Wordle or something on the native iOS application, it doesn't feel super native to me. It still kind of feels like maybe they're sliding up a web view. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a little confusing why they couldn't do that.
Yeah, right. But I have no idea. But I have been enjoying the game. It's in beta. I would not be surprised if it ended up getting out of beta pretty quick, because it seems like it's going to be a hit.
It's going to be a hit.
It's also one of the things that's nice about some of the newer games is I think they're more accessible than a crossword puzzle. The crossword puzzle is kind of the old, it almost feels like the old guard of daily puzzle, where people they'd work on it all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people would actually sit down and do it as part of their breakfast, and because they were just that good and practiced.
Yeah, or maybe it's early in the week and the difficulty of the puzzle is such that you can do it in one little session.
Yeah. But I remember when Sudoku came out, that was like, oh, I can do this faster.
Right.
And now all these games like Wordle, which they purchased a while ago, and this game called Connections. Yes.
Yeah.
And some of these other ones, the Spelling Bee.
that's like maybe in the middle of the spectrum that you're kind of laying out here, where it's like the crossword puzzles on the one hand, maybe Wordles on the other, and spelling bee might be somewhere in the middle because there's enough words there that you have to find.
Yeah, if you actually want to get all the way, yeah, if you want to get all the way to the genius level, then you're going to spend some time with it. But I like the idea of daily games. It's a really nice way for me to – I tend to start my day with them.
Yeah, me too.
Once I've actually gotten everybody out the door, that's kind of my – okay, I'm going to sit down. This is my in-between work. This is my commute, as it were, my commute.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. So we could describe the game. You see a grid of letters. There's a sort of clue or topic at the top of the puzzle, and then you're basically doing like a word search.
Yeah.
But you're and so you kind of press your finger on one letter to start, and then you drag your finger over the letters. When you do that, it highlights the letters you've touched, and then you can form a word that way. And the words you're looking for are all themed around something. They did a pretty cool one, I thought. And there's one special find that will go from one edge to the other edge. And that's also kind of like helps reinforce the theme.
Yep.
So I think it was span, the span
spanagram.
Word, spanagram was parenthood.
Oh, and yeah.
It dissected the board up and down.
Uh-huh.
And the way it worked for me was I found, like, I think baby was on the left side and adult was on the right side. And then I found parenthood, which sort of split it. And then I found but the cool thing that they did was then they put other adults on the adult side and other babies on the baby side. And so it was kind of
it was
fun
like animals, right? It was the other.
Yeah, it was animals. Yeah. So frog and tadpole. I don't remember the other ones,
right.
But it's a pretty cool puzzle.
Yeah. And it's fun. It's fun because I think it's one of the, I don't want to say easier side, but there are some things built in to make it like more accessible to people who are maybe newer to puzzles. Like you can just find any word that's at least four letters. And if you do enough of those, you get hints and it just kind of shows you, okay, these are the letters involved in one of the words. So you can figure out the order of them from that. And then hopefully that'll
give you
more. And
there's something too there where it's like, you can kind of pick your challenge level too.
Right.
If you just want to complete the puzzle, you can get those hints and you can breeze through it pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you want to challenge yourself. Sometimes I try to resist taking a hint
because
I want to try to get it quote unquote perfectly, which means using no hints.
No hints. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good one. I think it's definitely added to you and I are in that group where we share our daily games. Mm-hmm. That's been another big thing that I feel like Wordle kind of started was this like share a visual representation of how you did. It's not just a score. It is also a visual. And it's
like
a fun
emoji
way on socials or, in our case, a group text to like bragging rights.
One other thought here is something that I find really annoying about the New York Times game app is that they have stats and a leaderboard. You know, there's only three tabs in this app. It's a very simple little app. You get your games, then you can see stats, and you can see a leaderboard. Mm-hmm. And the leaderboard is meant to add maybe a little bit of a social component to it where you can add friends and then you can see their stats. But all of the stats and leaderboard, like that's all about
crossword puzzles. Yeah.
It's nothing to do with any of the other games. I don't understand this because then like we made this group chat and our phone and iMessages to like do this thing that could be done inside the app, like without like automatically instead of us having to fuck with it.
How many of us though in that group are doing the crossword? I think zero of us.
Well, Jess and her sister do.
They do?
I think
they
have their own stats. And I think they look at them and stuff. But like, if they just wired that up to the other games, we wouldn't even have to go to messages to see the thing. It would just all happen inside that games app. I don't know.
It's possible that they would eventually do that. But it kind of makes sense to me in that the crossword puzzle has been around forever.
Yeah.
And it was also probably the first game that was in this app, and it was probably the New York Times crossword app or something like that.
Yeah. I think you're right. I do understand why it is that way, but like, why haven't they fixed it? Why haven't they like rolled out these updates? I don't know.
Well, the one guy that they're paying to
Actually, I think
actually the New York Times
tech team.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah. I think the New York Times has quite a good talent crew. But
yeah.
Anyway, well, that's a lot about Strands. Let's move on. This is a could be improved from you. It says the availability of medicine.
I'm grumpy that my wife, who needs certain diabetic medicines, is having a hard time getting them because they're being prescribed as weight loss medicines for people that don't maybe need them so much.
Okay.
And so people that actually need this medicine to deal with some health concerns can't get it. I mean, there's a few things I'm grumpy about. I'm grumpy that the doctors are prescribing this when there's a shortage. I'm also grumpy that there is a shortage. And on top of it, even when there isn't a shortage, it's extremely expensive to have these medicines, even though their price is like
astronomical.
It's not like it's because it's made with gold or something. You know, it's like it is a medicine that could be produced and could be priced at whatever we decide as a society. So anyway, but yeah, so because of the shortage, she's had to like switch to a different medicine that has worse side effects for her. Mm. And it's just, what a fucking mess. And I realize I'm coming a little bit from privilege here, because there are, I'm sure, other places in the world where the availability of medicine is a hot topic, and it's not, you know, but still, it's like still frustrating.
It is definitely interesting. So another personal stake that I have in my family, Bethany has ADHD, and there's some medicines that she takes that are almost always out of reach, right? So they are considered controlled substances, and there's often shortages of them, and we've had to be strategic about which, like, pharmacies to go to, even because they're the ones are, like, even within the Walgreens system, it's like this is the one that's less likely to be out or whatever, this location. I don't know why. Yeah, it's just such a mess. So the supply thing, I have no answers to that. I definitely have thoughts, though, about pharmaceutical companies and the astronomical prices that they price things at. I mean, to me, I think that probably the U.S. and U.S. pharmaceutical companies produce and discover medicines at a higher rate than other. I mean, that's my sense, than other countries.
There's something about the system we have that does cause medicines to be
discovered the development of them. I think a lot of them do happen in the U.S. However, it's all privatized. You know, like, there's a little bit of government bargaining that happens because of Social Security. Medicare and Medicaid more particularly. Yeah. There's some negotiating power they have. Mm-hmm, but it doesn't go very far for the general public.
Right.
And so, yes, I think that diabetes medicine – the other thing that has been – that's gotten a lot of flack recently, and I think for good reason, is like EpiPens, which are life-saving medicines that don't cost that much to produce, but because of the way that the patent laws work, combined with the, you know, essentially monopoly on the companies that developed the
greed.
it just becomes astronomical. So and out of reach for people.
Something about our society, you know what I mean? It's like,
no one who's having an epileptic seizure should have to think about whether or not to deliver the pin. Yeah. So, anyway.
See,
I'm sorry.
I'm grumpy about this.
Yeah.
What can you do? You know, you're at the mercy of the supply. And, you know, so she's trying this other medicine. Hopefully it's not too bad this go around.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. It's tough sometimes.
Yeah.
Cool. I have two kind of technical ones. I'm just going to choose one. I don't know if we've talked about this in a while. But you remember that, like, that script kind of container mm-hmm. thing that we did at Hash Rocket called HR?
I do.
Yeah. So that was based on, at the time, it was 37 signals. Then it was Basecamp. Yep. Now it's 37 signals again. they're like,
that's a fun thing that they did.
That's a weird bunch of people now. But anyway, it was actually Nick Quaranto that
yes,
I think
I forgot about that.
That actually he owns it. It's his thing. It's called Sub, and it's mm-hmm. just a very, very lightweight framework written in Bash that tries to be cross-platform-ish mm-hmm. to like basically turn a single command into a bunch of subcommands so that you don't have all these like random Bash scripts hanging out on your system.
Yep, totally.
So at my previous company, I converted a bunch of, you know, there was just all kinds of like, we had like a bin folder, you know, that had all of these scripts in it. And I collected them all. And what's the advantage, though? The advantage is you get command line completion and a way to do built-in help. And those two things together are just really nice. And it really does, I think, make discovery a lot better for people who are new to these scripts or whatever your infrastructure is. And I just finished one for my team. So far, I don't think anyone else is using, but I did make it, and it's been really helpful for me because I had all kinds of these, like, you know, a lot of stuff where people are like, add this to your Bash RC or add this to your Z shell startup script or whatever. And I just want something that one command, and then I add to that.
Yeah. So there's kind of, for me, a connection between Sub or this command line tool and dot files, and I wonder if those two things are connected with your like the way you've approached this.
So I have my own personal one, and it lives right alongside my dot files for that reason. Because anywhere I have my dot files, I want these my like
commands.
Yeah, my little commands. Mine's JD, but it could be anything. Right. But almost everything at Docker is kind of like, you know, bring your own environment. So people have all kinds of editors. People have all kinds of, I mean, there's all three operating systems on my team even.
Wow. Okay.
You know, so telling people what to use isn't necessarily the right way to go, but providing something like here, and here's how you use it. Here's how you would add it to your whatever is the more prescribed way that people do it. So
that's cool. So I attempted to do something similar at Artsy. It didn't get a lot of traction, which is fine. But I used something different than Sub. I used something called OCLIF. So OCLIF is a framework that comes out of Heroku, building a framework to make a command line utility. But this is in the TypeScript ecosystem.
Okay.
And so you can publish it as a NPM package. You can install it with like Yarn or NPM. Or, you know, whatever, those kinds of things. It's got like good testing support. It kind of helped me learn a little bit about TypeScript, so that's another kind of reason why I did it.
Nice.
But I made one for Artsy, and I made one for myself, and so now like all of my commands that are a little more sophisticated than like in my dot files end up in that OCLIF thing.
Right. That is a common thing, at least in my own workflow, is a function or something that lives just in my dot files, and then it kind of graduates eventually to a subcommand.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thought, too. One more follow-up here is a concept that I discovered recently and thought maybe I'd bring up here. Have you ever heard of something called a do-nothing script?
This is different than a no-op, just a script that does nothing?
So the idea here, and you can Google it, some guy described it, is like if you have a procedure or some kind of process that's pretty manual, the first step to automating it is not automation, but instead his concept of a do-nothing script where you literally copy and paste in like the process and just have the script basically spit out the steps and then say like, did you do it? Or like wait for the person to do it. It's like, yes, I did it. Hit yes. Go to the next step. Okay, well, now you need to go to the AWS console and do this thing. When you've done that, hit enter for the next prompt, basically. So you're like turning a playbook or a process and procedure document into a command line utility by first just prompting the person to do the things that were in the playbook. Okay, now you've accomplished that. Now you can say, hey, I bet, you know, there actually is an API, and I'll bet I could, you know, hit the API and accomplish this one part of this task. And so through this evolution from a playbook to a do-nothing script to actual automation, you can kind of like make some improvements around the automation at whatever the thing is you're doing.
Right, that makes sense. Yep. I can get on board with that. It's hard for me to go for that immediate step because as soon as it's in like a programmable format, I'm like, well, I bet I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that might be tricky to like allow myself to even see prompts and want to hit through yes. But that's a good idea as a way to do the intermediate step.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's enough for today of the main cards, but I have a pretty important burning question for you.
Yeah.
What's for dinner?
Don't totally know. It's possible. So what's up for us is the kids are going to Grandma and Grandpa's tonight, and then the four of us are going to try to catch a college volleyball game that my sister-in-law is really interested in. So
in Minnesota?
The Gophers. The Minnesota Gophers are playing some other team. They are likely not going to do very well, but we're going because it's going to be in kind of like a small stadium, and so we'll get to kind of have better seats, whatever. But they don't sell tickets ahead of time, so that's why I'm saying I'm hedging a little because we're not totally sure we're going to get in. Okay. We're just going to show up and see if we can get seats. But so we may end up like having dinner at the stadium, you know, like hot dogs or chips or whatever they provide. Or we might not get in. We might just like say, fuck it, let's go to some restaurant. I'm not quite sure.
Right. Without kids, it's hard. It feels less like you're going to die.
Yeah. The stakes are a little lower when it's adults.
Yeah, exactly.
Figuring out the dinner. How about for the Davy clan?
We're getting pizza. Bethany was talking about getting it from this place called Pizza House that we like, that we haven't been to in a while.
Mm. Nice.
And yeah, that's it. I have a game night tonight that I haven't.
Nice.
We're playing a game through that it's probably the heaviest game I've ever played, called Voidfall.
Voidfall.
It is. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just, if you've played a lot of tabletop games, it's on the very heavy side. Like there's just a lot going on.
A lot of bits and bobs.
It is. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I played through like the tutorial or like half of the tutorial a couple weeks ago with them. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try to play a full game tonight. So
nice. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I think we did it.
Yeah.
Well, hi, Josh.
Oh, well, do you have any danglers?
I think I'm dangle free.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know.
All right, sir. I love you too.
Yep. Love you.
Okay, bye.